Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Back home again in Indiana, and it seems that I can see the gleaming candlelight still burning bright through the sycamores for me.
That's the iconic Jim Nabors opening up the Indy 500. It's Dave Plyer on this early Sunday morning on 720 WGN. So more than 150 drivers, fans, celebrities, and others share their personal stories and remembrances of the world's most famous auto race. In a new book to celebrate the Indy 500's 100th anniversary, which takes place on Memorial Day weekend, called Indy 500 Memories, an Oral History of the Greatest Spectacle in Motor Racing. 20 different race winners representing more than 40 victories are among those sharing memories, including the greatest names in the sport: Foyt, Unser, Andretti, Rutherford, Cheever, Mears, Sullivan, Rahal, Montoya, among others. And the book is as just about dreams as it is about memories, from A.J. Foyt listening to the 500 in his dad's garage as a young boy, to Bev Patrick bursting into tears as her daughter Danica becomes the first woman to lead the 500. Indy 500 Memories is sure to invoke surprise, laughter, tears, and awe, and is a must-read for any racing fan. One of the authors is Mark Spiegel. He earned the Jim Chapman Award for Excellence in Motorsports Public Relations while working in the CART IndyCar Series. He's an Indy 500 historian, and he is Mark Spiegel. Mark, thanks for waking up with us this morning.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate being on this morning.
And live from Indianapolis. Look at that.
I am in Indianapolis. This is good practice for race day next Sunday, when I'll have to wake up early to get out to the track and beat the traffic.
I bet. Well, first tell us a little bit about your history in the motorsports industry.
Well, I've worked in sports for the past 25 years in public relations and marketing. I worked at Honda and Miller Brewing, and also with Toyota and Valvoline through PR agencies. I was at Honda in the early 90s when they began competing in IndyCar racing, and I worked with Toyota when they started competing in NASCAR.
Wow, fantastic, fantastic. And you're obviously a big Indy 500 fan and historian. You and Art Garner wrote the book. What inspired you guys to put pen to paper here?
Well, Art had written a previous book called Black Noon, and it was about the 1964 Indy 500, and at the beginning of that race, there was a crash that took the lives of two drivers, Eddie Sachs and Dave McDonald. And the book came out a couple years ago. Art spent 4 or 5 years researching that book and putting that book together. And when the book came out and Art would talk to people at book signings or at the racetrack, a lot of them would tell him what the Indy 500 meant. And from that, Art kind of had the idea of collecting people's memories, not only from drivers, but fans, celebrities, team members, media, and just collecting these memories and putting the book together.
Fantastic, fantastic. You know, I have to tell you, I had a new acquaintance of mine from Indianapolis who said he's coming down for the race, and I went online and I found all this trivia, and I just thought I'd test him. And he's a young guy, he's in his like late 20s. Man, he passed that test. I think if you're living there and you're into the Indy 500, that's a big deal. You grow up with that in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think it's part of tradition. I think families, a lot of the memories we have are of families, you know, driving to the track in the 40s and 50s and setting up a picnic and people who went to the track when they were, you know, started going 10 or 11 and continue to go this day, and then their 60s and 70s. A couple of people have told us in their memories that their parents didn't let them go until they turned 10 years old. But I think it's a part of you know, like a holiday or
family
a
tradition.
Vacation or
absolutely.
Something.
Absolutely, it's family tradition. Absolutely. Now, the first chapter, you talk about the very first race. And some people ask me, you know, okay, it started in 1911, so we're in 2016. How is it the 100th? There was a few years in there during World War One and World War Two that the race just didn't happen.
Right, and I think they closed the track and the race didn't happen. And, you know, I'm not sure. I've been talking to people at the track over the past few days. People who have worked there. People who have been to 60 races or 70 races.
Wow.
So you mentioned me being a historian, and I think in terms of some of the people I've met and some of the people I know, I'm not sure if I would consider myself a historian.
Well, it's a terrific book. And I was mentioning, we opened up the conversation with Jim Nabors and the song Back Home and Again in Indiana. Since 1946, it's been performed there, even though it's not the official state song. It's really the official song of that opens the Indy 500. Jim Nabors has done this from 1972. He retired a couple years ago. What an iconic song in race day history.
It is, and you know, several of the memories revolve around the song. I think the interesting thing about Jim Nabors is he actually didn't realize he was singing that song. So in the memory we have, Jim Nabors was asked to sing before the race. He thought he was actually going to sing the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, that's funny.
And he asked the band to do a certain key, and they told him that's not the key for Back Home Again in Indiana, and that's how he found out he was doing that song before the race.
Oh, man. Oh, man. And did it iconically. I was watching on YouTube the last time he did it. And you could see even the crowd just emotional about knowing that it's the last time because it was such a piece of that history.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about tradition and people, it's part of their life and what they did growing up and through their life. And I think the song adds to that element and is something else that, you know, people definitely associate with the race. And I think families associate the song with the race and their annual traditions and I don't know if pilgrimage is the right word, but their pilgrimage to the track.
That's true. Tell us a little bit about the first race.
You know, the first race was 1911. The first race, the winner was Ray Haroon in the Marmon Wasp. We have an interesting memory in the book about that car actually being used for a TV shoot, and the broadcaster, while nobody was looking and most of the people had left for the day, jumped in that car and sat in it. And I think that the thing about, wow, the thing that he mentioned was sitting in that car and realizing, you know, the cars may have been going 65, 75 miles an hour, which was pretty quick in that days, but they also had dust and mud and everything, all the elements to deal with while going. And, you know, that's a far cry from the speeds they're running today, but also the car was open and obviously a lot of less car and a lot of less safety.
Sure. Why 500? Why five, you know, the distance of 500 miles? How did that come about?
It was settled upon. I think Carl Fisher was the one and his partners that wanted a big event. I think 500 miles was probably settled upon as a time when the race could have the race. So
yeah.
I think initially that was a reason for that miles. They wanted an iconic event, one that would become a tradition, one that would become something big, and I think that's what they decided upon.
I mean, this is, you know, a seven-hour race. You talk about all the horse races that go on, and they're over in minutes.
Right.
And this is an all-day event. And I grew up, you know, when I just remember my first memories of watching the races are that of, and you talk about these icons of racing, these drivers. To me, you mentioned A.J. Foyt and Al Unser, and that's racing to me.
Yeah, and I think the thing now is that when you look back in time at the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the early 80s, there were a lot of cars and drivers looking to get into the field. And there were as many cars making the race as not making the race, and probably more. A.J. Foyt talked about the first time he attempted to get into the race was in the late 50s, 1958, and he was just happy to make the field.
Wow.
But there were over 100 cars trying to get into the race. So a lot of drivers, their desire, their goal, and even in more recent times, Sam Hornish, a kid growing up in Ohio, he talked about his dream was just to qualify for the race. And he eventually won the race, but initially he just wanted to make the field, which he did several times.
I was looking, you know, these guys, though, they didn't just race for a few years. I mean, it was a couple decades. A.J. Foyt, you know, we were looking at three drivers that have won the Indianapolis 500 four times each. A.J. Foyt, 61, 64, 67, and then 10 years later in 77. Al Unser, 70, 71, 78, and then all of a sudden 1987. Rick Mears, 79, 84, 88, 91. I mean, there's definitely some longevity in these races.
Yeah, and I think it's something they enjoyed doing. It's something they wanted to do. I think it was, you know, the same thing with families going year after year. I think the drivers, it was the pull. It was the big race. It was, you know, the event, the greatest spectacle in racing. Al Unser, the last time he won, he was 47. The car he won in, which he talks about in the book, it was sitting in a hotel in Pennsylvania as a show car.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. And I was even looking at the list here. You know, women who have competed in the Indianapolis 500. Janeth Guthrie was the first in 77. A lot of rookies, you know, young drivers. It's been an amazing, amazing race. Who was the first? You know, I was looking at this. There was who was the first driver and team to earn $1 million? It was in 1989, I believe. It was Emerson Fittipaldi and Patrick.
Emerson Fittipaldi. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I mean, this is big time here. Well, we are talking to Mark Spiegel and the new book, Indy 500 Memories, an oral history of the greatest spectacle in motor racing. And there is more with him next on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to Mark Spiegel in the new book, Indy 500 Memories, an Oral History of the Greatest Spectacle in Motor Racing. So typically in the race, there are 33 cars. It was started with 40, but that's where it hovers around, correct?
Yep, 33 cars.
Now, you call out the first families of racing, and I love the flow of this book. You talk about A.J. Foyt, you talk about Bobby Unser. Let's talk about the families a little bit in racing, because I know generationally these families have participated for decades.
Yep, and I think, you know, both of those families, the Foyts and the Unsers, you know, passed along from father to son and continue on to following generations. Interesting thing about the Unsers is three Unsers. Al Unser won the race four times, as you mentioned. His brother, Bobby Unser, won the race three times. And then Al's son, Al Jr., won the race twice. So
amazing.
One family, if my math is correct, nine wins. And then Al and his son, first father and son to win the race.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Let's talk a little bit about the broadcast booth, because that's just as historic.
Yeah, and I mean, Art and I were at the track on Friday, and we happened to talk to Paul Page was there, and we were talking to him for a while, and Paul is a longtime broadcaster of the race, and he also worked with Sid Collins, and Sid was kind of the first voice that people heard broadcasting the race on radio. He worked for a big station here in Indianapolis, and he broadcast the race, and Paul was telling us, you know, which he shares in the book, is Sid, you know, had so many drivers, so many stories to talk about because there were so many cars that his formula was to work backwards and maybe tell stories of a few of the guys who didn't make the race and then tell the, you know, who's going to be there at the end, so you can save those stories for the end, but you can tell the stories of everybody else in the race. Kind of, you want to hit on everybody and find something interesting because everybody follows some of those different drivers.
But you're talking seven, you know, plus hours pregame, everything else, and these guys are taking you through it. I mean,
yep.
They're icons themselves.
Yes, and you know, you have people in the broadcast booth, have people in the pits, have people in the turn. So it's quite a cast. And, you know, obviously we talk about the length of the broadcast, but when you did have 80 or 90 or even 100 cars attempting the race, there are that many stories to tell, as well as what's actually happening on the racetrack.
What is your favorite personal memory of the Indy 500?
I have two, I think. And okay. I think in 1990 was the first time I actually went to the track. And I've always been a sports fan, and I've gone to, you know, had gone to football and basketball and baseball games. But as I walked or drove into the track and just got out and looked around, I was amazed at how big the track was, how many grandstands were there. So I think that was my initial memory. And then I was working with Valvoline, and they sponsored Al Unser Jr. and Gallus Racing in 1992 when Al Unser Jr. won the race. But I guess my memory is about that day was very cold, colder than usual for that time of the year. Roberto Guerrero was on the pole, and he actually had an accident on the pace lap because his tires hadn't warmed up. But I remember halfway through the race, I was in the pits, in the team's pits, and I remember somebody brought two big trays of chicken because the guys were hungry because it was a cold day. And at that point, I didn't really think that Al Unser Jr. had a chance of winning the race, but then he actually won the race, and you know, being there in victory lane, and then everything that came after that, the interest and the interviews and fielding all the requests for Al Unser Jr. So I think those are my two memories, you know, first being there and then being there when Al Unser Jr. won the race and working with his sponsor.
How exciting. How exciting. Well, we're looking forward to the big race next Sunday. The book is Indy 500 Memories, an Oral History of the Greatest Spectacle in Motor Racing. The author is Mark Spiegel. Mark, thank you very much for getting up with us this morning and sharing your memories, and have fun next week.
Okay, I appreciate that, Dave. And if I could also mention that the book is available on Amazon.com. And we have a Facebook page at Indy 500 Memories, and we have some events, some book signings, and some other events around town, and those are on our Facebook page as well.
Very cool. Thanks again, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.
All right.